As children of God, our desire is to do His will. And in our most sane moments as His people, we want to do His will. We find delight in doing His will. Doing His will has to do with going where He wants us to go and being what He wants us to be.
Sometimes we twist the will of God into something it's not. For instance, unraveling the mystery of God's will is the hard part, and following His plan is the easy part, right? Well, spoiler alert, neither one is simple. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll exposes our false ideas about God's will, and he replaces those fallacies with biblical truth. While our journey is challenging at times, following God's will is always fulfilling. Today's primary passage is Hebrews chapter 11. Chuck titled his message, Fleshing Out the Will of God.
It's interesting when you get into a subject like this, how many other things sort of cross your path and add insight to the subject. For example, I was reading and have been reading widely in preparation for these sessions together on the will of God, and came across a couple of examples of how others help enlighten us on the subject. It's no surprise to any of you to hear that I have been reading A.W. Tozer again, one of my favorite authors, and I find that I am in company with another dear friend of mine named Warren Wiersbe, who mentions in his book Walking with the Giants, a brief biography on Tozer, who lived from 1897 1963. Wiersbe says this of Tozer, I heard him preach many times, always with profit, and waited for his books to be published as impatiently as a detective story addict waits for the next installment of the current serial. Then he goes on to say, there was an intensity about Tozer's preaching, as there is about his writing. Tozer walked with God and knew Him intimately. To listen to Tozer preach was as safe as opening the door of a blast furnace. To read his books, you always find yourself searching your soul and examining your mind. And while reading his book on the knowledge of the holy, as one of our employees here at Insight for Living mentioned to me, there is a story that he told about the will of God that I've not mentioned before, that I want to read to you from his little section on the sovereignty of God. He tells this, if in His absolute freedom God has willed to give man limited freedom, who is there to stay His hand or say, what doest thou? Man's will is free because God is sovereign. A God less than sovereign could not bestow moral freedom upon His creatures. He would be afraid to do so. Perhaps a homely illustration might help us to understand. An ocean liner leaves New York bound for Liverpool. Its destination has been determined by proper authorities. Nothing can change it. This is at least a faint picture of sovereignty. On board the liner are several scores of passengers. These are not in chains. Neither are their activities determined by them or for them by decree. They are completely free to move about as they will. They eat, they sleep, play, lounge about on the deck, read, talk, altogether as they please. But all the while, the great liner is carrying them steadily onward toward a predetermined port. Both freedom and sovereignty are present here, and they do not contradict each other. So it is, I believe, with man's freedom and the sovereignty of God. The mighty liner of God's sovereign design keeps its steady course over the sea of history. God moves undisturbed and unhindered toward the fulfillment of those eternal purposes which he purposed in Christ Jesus before the world began. We do not know all that is included in these purposes, but enough has been disclosed to furnish us with a broad outline of things to come and to give us good hope and firm assurance of future well-being. Isn't that a good story? You've got a liner on its way. The destination will be reached, unless, of course, it's the Titanic. And I knew you were all thinking that. That's why I threw that out. And on board the ship are people moving about, doing whatever they wish within the confines of that liner, because the liner is moving toward its destination. I think it's an excellent way to put it. The testimony of Dora Greenwell is revealed in a piece she wrote way back in the 1800s. I am not skilled to understand what God hath willed, what God hath planned. I only know at his right hand is one who is my Savior. Isn't that another good way to put it? We're not skilled to understand all that is willed and all that is planned, but I know this, at his right hand is my Savior. And I rest in him, and I find my hope in him fulfilled. We're digging deeper and deeper into this subject, and we're finding the deeper we dig that it is a bottomless pit. It has bottomless depths. As children of God, our desire is to do his will. And in our most sane moments as his people, we want to do his will. We find delight in doing his will. And invariably, looking back, we're so grateful for his will and how he led us all the way through all the process to get to where he wanted us to be. Doing his will has to do with going where he wants us to go and being what he wants us to be. And don't you feel, in those simple little definitions, a release of your own and pride and will and a capturing of and fulfillment of his plan, his purposes? That's what it's all about. And in the process, having a deep peace, a satisfying sense of fulfillment, because we are in the circumference of his plan on this great liner that is moving inexorably toward God's destined arrangement for our lives. For some, it's a brief life. Some are taken in their teenage years, some in their 20s. Some, it's a lengthy life, and they go into their 80s and 90s and even beyond 100 years on this earth. Who can know why God would plan it one way for one and another way for another? We've searched the scriptures in our study to make sure we're on solid footing. We have found that there is the decreed will of God, which generally covers the things revealed in the scriptures and leaves unstated many of the things yet future. And then there are specific things about his will that we play a part in. And it's that part that gets fuzzy. That's where the struggle comes. It isn't a matter of just lying back and waiting for him to move us from plan A to plan B. You're dressed because you dressed yourself this morning. You're full because you fed yourself this morning. You are clean because you bathed yourself today. You got here because you put gas in your car. You arrived on time, most of you, to begin your work because you have a responsibility at Insight for Living to accomplish the responsibilities that are part of your job profile. That's all part of your responsibility, and had you laid in bed, God would have done none of those things for you. So we're not addressing this passive kind of this kind of slothful, God does it all, and if he wants this done, he'll have to do it. We know what people often mean when they say that, but that could be misleading. Because much of this has to do with coming to terms with what he wants rather than what would please me and what I would want. Now it's time to move into an even more personal realm, and in doing that, I want you to travel with me to just one chapter of the Bible. We've been from Genesis, really, all the way through the writings of John, over almost to Revelation in our study. But today we're going to settle on the 11th chapter of Hebrews. And I want to underscore something as we do that, which you'll not find in your notes, but occurred to me late last evening before I retired. I thought, I am finding the longer I live, now be careful how you hear this, just as I want to be careful how I say it, that doing the will of God is rarely easy and simple and uncomplicated. Doing the will of God is usually difficult and convoluted because we don't know the way He's taking us, and frequently it is a part of bending us and, if necessary, breaking us to get it done. That's why the Christian life is this continued sense of struggle. I don't mean that it's a marathon of misery. It's a struggle with the will. If you were raised as I was raised, you were raised to take care of yourself, be responsible for your belongings, shoulder your part of the load. If somebody needs to do it, throw yourself in there and get it done. Don't wait for the other guy. And as you grow up, you become increasingly more in charge. I was just on this dove hunt with all these friends from the seminary or around the seminary. And we had 40 type A's with loaded shotguns running all over this area in northern Mexico, shooting doves and other things, I might add, in the process. And amazingly, we didn't shoot ourselves. And all of us came at certain times just laughing about something because somebody had made a decision and we all were thinking, why didn't they ask me? I'd have known a better plan than that. You know, we got 40 guys with 40 wills and 40 decisions, all of whom run something, and many of whom own their deal and have their own planes and calling their own shot. You take people like that, and you try to convince them there's another will that they're to fall in line with, and they're to go that way, you got a fight on your hands. So while we want our children, as we raise them, to become responsible, individuals and do significant things, we also want them to learn in the process to listen and to wait. That's why it gets complicated. That's why it isn't easy. And how wonderful it would be if we could be fully responsible and fully yielding. That's a description of maturity. Someday we will be there. What is it the songwriter says? Then we shall be what we should be, then we shall be where we would be. Things that are not now nor could be soon shall be our own. Love that old hymn. Sounds like a tongue twister. The whole point of it is in a glorified state when we are with Him, it all falls together. And we will be then what we have always wanted to be. Someone has said, you will never be what you should be until the rapture. When you're caught up with Him in the clouds, then you will finally be all the things you have longed to be in a glorified state. Until then, there is this give and take, this pull and push. Now, we concluded our previous session with a couple of comments that had to do with a crisis of belief and major adjustments. Would it help if we repeated those? A crisis of belief requires faith and action. Remember that fork in the road I talked about? A crisis of belief is a turning point. It is a fork in the road where you determine at that point you're going to make a decision. When Cynthia and I landed at Long Beach Airport the late Sunday night, we got the rented car. It was now close to 10 o'clock. And I'd always been picked up by someone from Insight or often had been at that airport and driven, so I hadn't paid a lot of attention, though I'd lived out here almost 25 years. And we made a turn, and we got to a sign that said, Garden Grove Freeway, the 22, east-west. And it was coming. I mean, I was going along 35, 40 miles an hour, and I'm thinking, east-west, east-west. And so I turned the wrong way, and I said, dadgummit, I went the wrong way. And I wanted to back up, and there's people right behind you, you know, ready to do road rage if you do something dumb. So I get on, and I'm going the wrong direction. I got to a fork, and I was thinking west was east. Isn't that the funniest thing? In that moment, you've got to turn. And so you turn and you go. That's a crisis moment in driving. Jonah had that when God said, go to Nineveh. It was a crisis of belief. He came to a fork where he wanted to get out of town. Prejudiced, bigoted that he was, albeit a prophet of God. He struggled between his own prejudices against the Assyrians, Nineveh being the capital, and their need for the Lord, at the same time, his strong, zealous Jewish roots. And he said, no way. He took the next ship to Tarshish, which is kind of like going to Berlin by way of Honolulu. He went the opposite direction. And God came to him the second time, said, no. You're going to go to Nineveh. And Jonah had to struggle with that. Sarah, Abraham's wife, you're going to have a little baby. And he told her that late in life. And it didn't come. It didn't come. And she didn't conceive. And she passed the age of conception. And remember what she did? She gave her handmaiden, Hagar, to Abram. And she said, go into her and have the child by her. It's a dumb way to go. Wrong plan. And she came to a crisis of belief. Instead of waiting, she rushed into it and pushed Hagar into Abram's tent. And the result was Ishmael. And my, that which has followed has gone since that time, gone on since that time. There will never be a solving of that conflict till eternity dawns. It goes all the way back to that crisis of belief. And the second, the major adjustments lead to release of the familiar and risk regarding the future. I smile because none of that comes easily or naturally. We don't like to release, and if there's anything we like less than that, it's risk. We don't like leaving the familiar and the comfortable, and we certainly don't like walking into the unknown. As some of you said earlier in our discussion here, in getting ready for this session, it's the unknown that bugs us. But major adjustments call for that. Back to a word from Henry Blackaby. To get from where you are to where God is will require major adjustments. These adjustments may relate to your thinking, circumstances, relationships, commitments, actions, I would add geography, and or beliefs. Some people think these adjustments are not major. Anytime you go from where you are to where God is, you have to make major adjustments. To move from your way of thinking or acting to God's way of thinking or acting will require adjustments. You cannot stay where you are and go with God at the same time. Okay, I can feel the vise tightening a little bit, can't you? I can feel the roots getting a little bit looser. I can feel the uneasiness that connects with, well, what about my family? And what about my mom who needs me? What about the situation regarding where I finally found a home church? And it's you see what I'm saying? It starts to churn away at you. We've returned to them before, and I'll go back to them before I'm through today, but Tom and Sue Kimber with their son Thomas, who were a part of our Insight for Living ministry for so long, went through that. Did a little summer internship, and looked into Asia, found themselves in Asia, and while there, they began to ponder, is this what God wants us to do? Everything we know and call familiar is in the English language, and it's mainly in Southern California, where Tom got his degree at Talbot, and Sue and Tom are rearing their son Thomas, and they got their finally got the home they had wanted. We who know the Kimbers just went through all that with them, and they came back, and they were a little quieter than usual, and you began to talk to them, and they were in a quandary. Maybe this is God's plan. It can't be Asia. I mean, at least have it a European country where the letters look similar. And you can at least figure out. We were in Mexico and we were looking at signs. And one of the things we did on this hunt was try to tell me what that sign says. It was hilarious how we did our translating work of Spanish. But you can make out some words. But you go to Asia. Looks like somebody dropped a bomb and letters kind of came apart. And then somebody shoved them all back together in little bunches. And that's where they are. In a culture, in a language, among a people, in a climate, totally unfamiliar. Major adjustment. And guess what? We who emailed him are having the time of their life. And the mistakes they have made. Someone said if you travel, you need a great sense of humor and no sense of smell. And they are having a terrific time. I wrote him in my last email, whatever you lose, don't lose your sense of humor. People who travel well have a great sense of humor, and they do. But what a change. What an adjustment. And chances are good he's not calling you or me to Asia. But wherever it is, there will be some unfamiliar experiences, and that change is to some people just downright frightening. Now, tucked away in the 11th of Hebrews is the definition, a very general definition for faith. In verse 6, at least it's a series of words that have become familiar to us as we read them. Without faith, it is impossible to please Him. The Him has reference to the previous verse, living our living God. Notice the last word of verse 5. So verse 6 goes back, modifies God in verse 5. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. For he who comes to God must believe two things. Must believe that he is, and must believe that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. Keep looking at that verse. If I were to paraphrase faith according to verse 6, I would say, as I define it, it's believing God is who he says he is, and God will do what he says he will do. It's believing that. It's trusting my life into that set of truth. It's believing God is who he says he is. So that's his nature. Those are his attributes. Those are the things that characterize him. And the scriptures are replete with illustrations of all that that would include. And second, it means God does what he says he'll do. In this case, he'll reward those who seek him. To amplify that a little, I put in my notes these words. It's trusting him when I'm unable to provide proof. It's trusting him when I'm unable to provide proof. It's obeying him when I'm unsure of the outcome. That's a mouthful. Neither one, again, I say, will come easily. It's trusting him when I'm unable to provide proof and everything in me screams for the empirical proof. Show it to me. Give me the evidence. I want it in a test tube. Put it under a microscope. Prove this. Then, having seen it, I'll go with it. It's called walking by sight. And it's very comfortable. It's when I can't prove it, but I'm going. We can talk about this stuff half a day. So we don't have to do it. We cling to the familiar rather than releasing it. We like the predictable rather than the risky. And that makes for a great human being and a pathetic Christian. The world is full of human beings just like that. Doesn't mean they're wildly immoral. It doesn't mean that they are running around out of control. It just means that there's no faith. And it doesn't please God.
Yeah. In the Christian walk, it's imperative we learn to trust God, even when we can't see Him or hear Him. Our mandate is to believe what He says to be true and then move forward. You're listening to Insight for Living. Chuck Swindoll titled today's message, Fleshing Out the Will of God. This particular topic, that is the will of God, triggers a lot of curiosity because we long to know God's plan for our future. And His plan rarely aligns with our own and often surprises us. If you're wanting to learn more, let me point you to a couple of resources. First, Insight for Living has prepared a printed Bible study called Searching the Scriptures. It's a spiral-bound workbook that contains 11 chapters, one for each sermon that Chuck presents in this series. Many of our listeners are using this Bible study to guide their conversations in a small group. And of course, it's perfectly suited for your personal devotions as well. To purchase the Searching the Scriptures Bible Study Workbook for the Mystery of God's Will, go to insight.org/offer. Also, all 11 sermons for this series are in stock and available right now. And you can purchase the entire collection of CDs by calling us at 800-772-8888. The title of the complete series is The Mystery of God's Will. Do you recall the first time you found Insight for Living on the radio? Many have told us about their experience many years ago and the spiritual progress they've made over the years. Well, perhaps today is the day that you step forward to do for someone else what someone once did for you. We invite you to become one of our valued monthly companions. A monthly companion gives a contribution every month in the amount of your choosing. To become a monthly companion right now, call us at 800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org/monthly companion. Are you still curious about the mystery of God's will? I'm Bill Meyer. Join us again Tuesday when Chuck Swindoll continues his clarifying message on Insight for Living. The preceding message, Fleshing Out the Will of God, was copyrighted in 1998, 2000, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Incorporated. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.